I spoke to tens of thousands of women and men about, you know, every person that walked into the store was looking for a solution for some type of beauty issue, whether it's to make them look more beautiful, or they were insecure about something, or they're trying to fix something. Like there's a reason why they were there. And having spoken one-on-one to so many people, it's just like priceless market research that I didn't even know I was doing for a future endeavor.
Welcome to Elevate Your Career, the podcast dedicated to empowering individuals from all walks of life as they navigate the ever-changing landscape of their chosen fields. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of professionals from various career stages to uncover the secrets behind achieving success in any industry. We'll explore how they achieved their career goals and the path they took to get there. Your host is none other than Nicole McMackin, CEO of the Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC, an award-winning information technology solutions and staffing provider. Now let's get to the show.
On today's episode of Elevate Your Career, we have the honor of speaking with Mana Kadar, CEO and founder of Mana Kadar Beauty. Mana has one of the most inspirational stories I've ever heard. Learn on today's episode how an immigrant from another country is living the American dream, and more importantly, what it took for her to get there. She is self-made, she's self-funded, and one of the most dynamic leaders I have met. Mana is the creator of the 7-Minute Face and successful global cosmetic company. Learn her secret to success and the foundation, no pun intended, on how she created an empire for she and her family. Mana, welcome to the show. It's so excited to have you here today.
I am so honored to be here with you.
So for those listeners that do not know, which I'm sure is the majority, Mana is a dear friend of mine, and I have been looking forward to interviewing her because she has launched one of the largest beauty brands, actually globally, and she has a really unique start to her story that a lot of people will admire, and I think it will really resonate with many, many people. So I was excited to have you on and just tell your story. I myself have heard it. It's inspiring. So welcome to the show, Mana.
And thank you. I can't wait to share the story with everyone.
Okay. So you know, you've listened to the podcast. We're going to start with a fun fact that not many people would know except your very, very closest friends.
A fun fact about me is I was not allowed to watch TV or listen to music until I was about 10 or 11. And so I do not know much about pop culture, movies, anything before 1992.
Why was that? Why?
I was raised with education first. And so one of the first things my mom had me do when we first moved to this country was I literally had to memorize the dictionary. So I learned every single word in the dictionary, and we would go through this practice of learning the words, learning synonyms, antonyms. And I was just very busy with my dictionary and my studies.
Oh my goodness. So tell us a little bit about where you are from.
Okay. So I was born in France. And although that sounds very glamorous, I was born in Paris, France. It's not as glamorous as it may sound. So my dad is French and Lebanese, and my mom is Chinese. We immigrated here when I was about 5 or 6 years old because she was leaving a situation where there was a lot of abuse. So drug abuse, physical abuse. And finally, my dad wanted to marry me off and send me off to Lebanon at a very young age. So she did not want that path for me. And so she and my grandmother fled in the middle of the night and left Paris and came to the US. So here I am now with you.
I know. And here we are. Well, so how old were you when you came over? I'm sorry.
About six.
Six. Okay. And do you remember living in France? Do you remember being in another country?
I do remember it very vaguely. I do remember some unkind things I saw that happened between my mom and my dad. That's the only memory I have of him. But what I do remember is my mom's strength. Like, if you can imagine, she's not from France. So she was in a foreign country there and leaving with very, very little money, resources, and going to yet a different country with no resources. That must have taken incredible courage and strength.
And she left with your grandmother?
With my grandma, yeah.
And so why the U.S.? And was it California?
It was California. U.S. is just, you know, the land of opportunity. I still feel that way about this country. And that's why so many people want to come here. So it's just such a privilege for us to be here.
And it's interesting because your story, what I love so much, it is the American dream. You and your family have done that. They left another country and they came here with nothing and they built something tremendous. And what I wanted to understand was, let's talk about your assimilation into the U.S. when you got here and really kind of the struggles and the help and the aid that people lent you and your determination and that of your moms and your grandmothers, right, for you. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I would say at the foundation of what it was, me, mom and grandma, essentially was, you know, the root was hard work and education, right? So my mom, she did, no job was too small. So I remember her, you know, waking up at 3 o'clock and going to the bakery to make bread. And then she would go from there and work in the kitchen at a preschool. And from there, she would go to a restaurant and work in the evening. So that work ethic was very much instilled in me. I saw it. And grandma was sitting at home and she was, you know, she was sewing piecemeal. And I remember helping her with these belt loops, making sure the belt loops were perfect, like when I was little. So everyone was contributing to the household. I remember cleaning the house top to bottom when I was 8 years old because everyone was working and doing their part. And that was me doing my part. But, you know, we grew up in a very poor area.
Where did you grow up?
In Lincoln Heights, California. And, you know, there's a lot of crime. There was a lot of, just wasn't the best area to be raised. That being said, I did feel that there was a lot of love in the community. You know, like there was people would help each other. We didn't have any financial assistance, but there were, as I got a little bit older, there was a lot of programs that my mom would find that was, that would take me in for the summer and have me learn like a new skill for the summer or summer camps. And one, Southern California Edison did this for me for many years and sent me to different camps. But one of the most profound ones that they sent was from high school. In my high school years, they sent me to a business program at USC, which I then ended up going to a number of years later. But that really gave me the foundation at a very young age to understand business and business principles. But there was a lot of different programs like that that my mom found for me to keep me, I wasn't a troublemaker, but out of trouble or out of harm's way,
right? And I think that's important. Very similar in that my family, we all, you know, working class family growing up, and we all had our parts. And I worked, I can't even remember when I didn't work. I was, my father started a construction company and my mother was in a business of summer camps and then schools and after school care. And I remember always being a part of the summer camps, whether I was working at a fishing pond all summer for the camp or, you know, stuck with the horses all summer and, you know, working with those. And the work ethic that I saw really helped propel me for who I am today. And I know that's the same case for you. It sometimes you and I are of the same ilk and the listeners obviously didn't hear us on this call before we went live on the podcast, but I was sharing with you that, you know, I tend to always want to help and keep myself busy and engaged to the point where I'll volunteer to put on this or I'll volunteer to fly across the country for a speaking engagement and I'll do this. And, you know, and plus you're trying to handle your own lives and you are very much the same, especially around giving back and helping kids. It's part of how we grew up, right? Because we were always working and seeing that and seeing our families help others. And so I think it plays a large part in who we later on developed to be.
Absolutely.
Now, were you in public school? I'm assuming.
Yes, I was in public school all the way until college.
Okay. And then your mother found, so were you doing things after school kind of, you know, and again, my family was the same. They were saying, you're a great kid. I just don't want you to be influenced by kids that are going down the wrong path. So how they did that was they kept me in every after school program, or I was with them working after school. And that's from, you know, I'll date myself by saying like junior high and elementary school. So I was kind of tied at their hip as well.
I think to your point, it was just keeping my mom me busy, right? I opened up my old yearbook and, you know, there's a quote, like my quote was, I have a class, meaning like I was always going to another class. I was always learning something. Like a funny story was back in our day, like that SAT was very important. So my mom made sure I was prepared. So I took so many SAT classes that by the time I had to take the SAT, I got a very good score. And so I was so proficient and educated in how to take the SAT that I then taught it. So, you know, it was one of those things where
one of those whiz kids.
Learned it properly, you know, so there is a methodology behind the SAT, but you know, that's just one story of just, I was just always in a class learning something. I think you and I still kind of do this as adults to a certain degree. We're always learning.
Yes. If you are a leader and you're not learning, you're not a leader.
Right. Right.
So yeah, for sure. For sure. And so let's talk a little bit about your first job and how that came about.
So I worked at Bath and Body Works. I think I just went and walked around the mall and just, you know, good old fashioned paper applications, which was really great because I learned about retail and customer service. It was a fun job. Very shortly after that, I ended up working for an insurance broker as an admin to the Stars. So he was not your typical insurance broker, which then led me to my first entrepreneurial business opportunity. As these are retail cosmetic, this was a retail cosmetic store that I was able to purchase at the Brea Mall. I was 16 years old.
What? 16?
You didn't know this?
No, I didn't know this.
Oh, you didn't know this.
Oh my gosh. No, yeah, I did not know. You have to now back up, because how did you get the money? To
savings. So we saved every single dollar from Chinese New Year, Christmas. We're all about saving. So I had my little savings book. It was $25,000. My mom did not know that I took this money out. And I ended up purchasing this business. It was an asset sale. I was able to assume the lease. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to get a lease at 16 years old because I had zero credit.
I was going to say, how do you buy a business at 16 years old in a mall?
Like, yeah, it was wild. You know, ignorance is bliss, right? Like knowing what I know about business now, I'm like, oh my God, like that, you know, I just didn't know what I was endeavoring in. But what I did know was that I worked there every day after school, every weekend. And for people that have worked retail, the mall business is like 363 days or 362 days a year, 7 days a week, very, 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 very long hours. So I was just there all the time. And I happened to be a good salesperson. So I turned that business around and I took the profits from one store and then continued to build the next store, the next store, and the next store. So then I went from there to Mission Viejo Mall.
Did your mom know that? I mean,
She knew after the fact. And it was,
oh my gosh. So you were very rebellious. What a risk taker. I mean, to take $25,000 that your mom did not know about and sign paperwork and assume a lease, assume a business, a takeover. That's incredible, Manna.
I felt good about it. Like I felt confident I could make it happen. I took a look at the numbers and what little that I knew about numbers at the time. It was simple. It was a simple P&L. Yeah. I never thought of it as that big of a risk at the time.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you took your entire savings.
You're right.
And you went around and you know, obviously you didn't tell her till after, and you signed a lease and you bought a business and you were 16. I think my parents would have come unglued if I would have done
it. Wasn't like I went to the mall and went on a shopping spree. So at least like once she calmed down, she was like, okay, it's a business. It's an asset, right? So it's an investment. is really how I looked at it and I explained it. So when you explain it in that type of term, it's like, okay, well.
Well, you know, it's funny that you're saying that. So I think I shared with you, I was giving a speech this morning for a company in the UK, and I was talking to them that being able to tell a story, storytelling is a key to successful people. And you just, now that you just said that, it was making me smile because you're saying, well, it's all how you position it, right?
Right.
An investment is not, could be, you know, something terrible and defiant and, you know, no, it's an investment for our family. And I know, and I have the proof and I have the numbers on how I can make it work. And then you went on to purchase more at 16. Is that correct?
The next stores that I grew, I built them from scratch. So I had the model.
And how old were you now?
17. I built one a year until I graduated college. You know, when you're young, I'm just shaking my head.
I am shaking my head.
So then I went from Brea Mall to Mission Viejo Mall to Main Place to UTC and then Fashion Show Mall. My last store was in Fashion Show Mall in Vegas. So,
and these are all beauty stores.
So this is before Ulta, before Sephora, before any other, you know, those big mass beauty stores came about. So this is precedes all of them.
You were before your time. I'm telling you, you were before your time.
Yeah. Well, you know, that really was the foundation, no pun intended, to what I do now, because I spoke to tens of thousands of women and men about, you know, every person that walked into the store was looking for a solution for some type of beauty issue, whether it's to make them look more beautiful, or they were insecure about something, or they're trying to fix something. Like there was a reason why they were there. And having spoken one-on-one to so many people, it's just like priceless market research that I didn't even know I was doing for a future endeavor.
Yeah. How did your family end up working with you and supporting you?
Nope.
Oh, I would have thought. Okay.
No, you know what's interesting? My family members have very different skill sets, none of which fell into anything that I did back then or any businesses I've had then until now. We just have very different skills and different talents. I also don't believe in mixing private business and family. I've seen it go awry, and I like to keep those relationships separate if at all possible.
So you have two children, and if they grow up, and they're beautiful little boy
Thank
and girl,
you.
And if they grow up and want to come into your multi-billion dollar makeup launched business, global, which it is, in several years, would you say no?
Well, they're 6 and 7 right now. So it's difficult to say. I mean, they would need to work from the bot. There would be no nepotism. They would need to work from the very, as an intern, starting all the way up, and they would have to earn every position along the way. So if they put in the work and prove themselves, then they can. I'm not sure if, like, based on their skill sets, I'm not sure if that this, it would even be a good fit for them, but right. You know, they can make their own decisions down the line, and we'll see it. If it's not a good fit, then there's plenty of other,
they
can go work for you.
They could. I'll take them. So here you are, and you're building these stores, and you're now 17, 18 years old, and you're hiring people. How are you hiring people? I mean, you were a kid yourself. What are you basing hiring managers of the store, and who's doing the finances and filing the corporate tax, and who's doing all of that?
I was doing all of it. And so the labor pool for retail is it's different than what your business traditionally recruits for at that level. So I think that inherently, the people that want to work in that environment are, you know, a certain type of person, a certain personality that wants to work in that business. So there's not a lot of longevity there. So I think that it was just trying to find the right personality fit for the business and to work with myself I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I used to think ruling with an iron fist was the way to do it because I was trying to prove something because I was 16 and 17, you know, I was young. I no longer do that. Like that's the very opposite of what I do right now. But it was difficult to, even today, I think the most difficult part of a business is keeping everyone happy, having a good corporate culture, having the right people on board. I'm very lucky today. I have an incredible, incredible team. It's taken me 14 years to get to this point, but in this business that I have today, but it was hard. It was really hard. I have so many stories.
Well, and what I think is really telling is during that time, the corporate culture didn't exist. Like people were not cognizant or thoughtful. It was do better, work harder. That was it. Do better, work harder. Show up on time, do what you're supposed to do, put your head down and let's go. It wasn't about you as an individual, if this was really something that you wanted to do or you could see yourself do or, you know, your goals and objectives, if you were coming onto a company, it was your boss tells you to do something, you do it. You put your head down and you know, and it was very different than companies today and corporate cultures. Like I didn't even know what a corporate culture was. I don't think I heard that until maybe 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, I think it's different. And for someone at that age to be running a multitude of businesses. So were you going to school at the same time as running?
Yes. So what I would do is I would go to school like during the day, you know, and then I would go directly to the mall right after school. College was really interesting. So I was going to school at SC full time while still running and developing these stores.
And that's because it's global, the podcast. So it's University of Southern
California.
University
of Southern California. Yes.
Right. Sorry. Right.
I forget.
Right.
We're not just regional. Of course, right, global.
Right.
So while going to college, I would schedule the earliest classes possible, like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and I'd be out of there by 11. So then I would run to the different stores and operate the stores. What was cool was I was studying finance and business. So I would talk to my professors and say, look, this is what I'm doing. I'm walking the walk. And so I would be able to take the lessons that I would learn in class and directly apply them immediately to what I was doing. So it was very akin to like an MBA type of an education. So it was really fun doing the like cerebral book side of it and then doing the practical application side of it at the same time.
Right. And I bet your professors loved that. I mean, they must have thought, oh my goodness, we have a live case study right here and now in our class.
Yeah. They thought it was really fun, you know, to be able, and then I would be able to share feedback with like, oh, like that marketing thing you taught, like this is how it was interpreted and these were the results, right? So it's an actual like real life case study.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is super fun. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have 5-6 stores, it sounds like, and you sell them or what was your next step?
I had 7 stores in 6 years. And so this is 2001. I was just, sorry, 2011. I was graduating in 2002 and 9/11 had happened. And so it was very eerie because the malls, the only people that were in the malls were the employees themselves. Like it was just eerie. And so at this time, I was pretty burnt out on retail. So I had an opportunity to sell and I did. So I sold the chain and I was 22 and I was like, okay, I can't retire just yet. Like what, you know, what do I do? So utilizing our USC network, I talked to a friend that was in a finance class and she recommended that I interview at a bank that she was just hired for. So I shifted careers into corporate banking and I became a financial analyst. I didn't even know what a financial analyst was and really what I was doing, but I thought, okay, well, this is probably a good path to walk for a little while until I find the next thing.
And that's when you did that, you didn't really realize, or maybe you did at that point in time, but you wanted a break from it that, I mean, you are an entrepreneur and you are a risk taker, heavy, heavy, heavy.
Yes.
And to go into that role as an analyst, from an entrepreneur. I can't think of anything, let's put it this way, a worse decision for someone like you with your personality and just your DNA makeup of who you are. And so how long did you last? And tell us a little bit about that journey there.
You know, I will start with the positive, and I will start by saying I was in corporate banking for about 7 years, and that was probably the best 7 years of learning of my life. Like, so, you know, you start out as an analyst and it's very tedious, very just, you know, it's boring really, but you learn a lot. You learn the ins and outs of lots of different businesses, what makes businesses work, what doesn't, telling the story. And so that experience has transferred into my next businesses so much so that it has really dictated the type of financing I've been able to get. I'm still self-funded, right? So I don't have any investors in the company, but you know, during COVID, like managing that and the growth of the company over the years and expansions. And, you know, I mean, there's so much mathematic financial gymnastics. I don't know if I would have been able to get as far as I have today without having that finance foundation from that corporate banking experience. It was really priceless.
I was just speaking about this morning, and I do this quite a bit. Someone had asked me about how do you elevate your career? And I said, no matter what you do, you have to have a sound financial and business mind. And if, let's say you're in marketing, or let's say you're an entrepreneur and you have a great thought and idea like you did, and you want to, but if you really want to be an expert in your field, you've got to understand business. You've got to understand how operations work. You have to understand what CapEx is, OpEx. You have to understand how to read a profit and loss statement. You have to understand debt. You have to understand this if you really want to elevate your business and your career. And the reason that's important, just as an individual contributor, is to demonstrate to the business that you understand what the business needs. And by doing that, you can go from area to area within an organization, demonstrating to them that you know and understand the facets and can be value to them, mm-hmm. because that's always what they're looking for. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that, because having a solid foundation in business helps you become a better integrated business person, as well as, again, individual contributors. It is key.
You are so right on. I mean, there are parts of the business that I don't love, but I've had to become an expert in, like operations. It's just not my favorite thing, but because it's such an each piece of the business is very integral, right? And they all affect one another, and you need to know how they all affect one another, because making this decision with this department, it will trickle through the rest, right? And if you make a bad decision, then what are the consequences and how do you fix it? So you have to be an expert in every single facet of your business, because if you're not, who's going to be the expert?
That's right. And you know, it's so true too, what you're saying is that's not just for individuals who are running their business. Let's take someone on IT or, you know, in a different division. Say you're in finance, accounting, or marketing. Mm-hmm. The decision that you make will affect every single vertical within that business. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're in marketing and you launch a campaign, and this has been happening actually in the world now. You have these companies that are hiring people, they're launching these campaigns, but they're not really understanding the brand. They're not understanding who traditionally they're supposed to be marketing to, right? Consequently, those come back and people don't like it for one reason or another, and it affects the business greatly,
right.
or it affects it positively, and the supply chain isn't ready for that.
Right.
So it has an effect. And if you really understand the operations, how the business works one to the other, I think it's a critical takeaway from our discussion today. So thank
right.
you.
Absolutely.
Are you enjoying the episode thus far? We'll be right back after a quick word with our sponsor, Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC. Are you ready to thrive in the ever-evolving tech industry? The tech world is constantly changing, and ITC is your partner for navigating it successfully. Whether you're seeking top-tier tech professionals or the perfect opportunity, we are happy to connect you with talent to transform your business. At ITC, we specialize in placing first-rate, diverse technology talent into corporations, with a particular focus on underrepresented groups in tech. We believe in bringing new perspectives and ideas to your team. Together, we can contribute to a more innovative technology industry. Diversity isn't just a buzzword for us, it's in our DNA. Whether you're looking at bringing on more tech talent or you're a tech professional searching for your perfect role and employer, look no further. Take a look at www.irvinetechcorp.com and pick the best option for you. Be part of our mission to create a more inclusive and innovative technology industry. Once again, it's www.irvinetechcorp.com. Now back to the show.
So you're there for 7 years and it's boring as hell, but you're learning a lot. And then what next?
So I had the entrepreneurial bug. You know, I had just gotten married and I was like, okay, you know, great salary, weekends are off, lots of vacation time. So it's a great career in general, and it's very friendly towards, you know, family, but I was so bored. So I was trying to find a business to get into that would somehow provide me with passive income and would operate itself. And I'm smirking right now because you and I know there are no businesses that operate. Okay, so you and I both know that businesses do not operate themselves. So I was finding a business to purchase and I saw this tanning salon and spa. It had some pretty good like net income dollars. So I thought, okay, you know, you have like a little teeny bopper up front that checks in the people and all these machines do all the work. Great. That was perfect for the model that I thought would make sense for me. So ultimately I purchased that business. And this is, mind you, this is maybe almost 20 years ago. So tanning was still a thing at the time. And so I purchased the business and I would spend, again, nights and weekends there. And I loved it. Like I got my entrepreneurial spirit back and I was doing the marketing, you know, it was a very small business and very simple, but I definitely turned that business around and I decided to just take a leap of faith and leave banking. So I left this whole cushy career and decided to pursue these tanning salons because once I figured out the model, I was like, okay, I can replicate this, and which is what I did. Then I just continued to acquire and acquire underperforming salons and do like a little tanning turnaround. And that's what I continued to do for the next several years.
And how many stores did you have then?
I got up to 3 before. Part of the turnaround for these tanning salons was, okay, you're going to these salons to look better, to look good, to look tanned and toned and skinnier or whatever. So there were these big lobbies within the spaces. And I decided to incorporate a beauty bar into each salon. So you can go there and you can get a facial. We offered eyelash extensions before eyelash extensions were a thing. I did them myself. You can get threading. You can do, you know, so there's a number of things you can go and achieve at the salon. And so I opened a little beauty bar section. I had skincare. We had all these things. We didn't have a makeup line. And so I thought, okay, well, I was on the retail side. Let me do the manufacturing side of things. So I launched the cosmetics line. It was very small capsule collection into the 3 stores. And that was my first retail footprint into cosmetics.
And that was your brand that you run today?
That's the brand that I have today.
Wow. And okay, well, let's back up. You sold those tanning salons and
I have since, yes, sold the salons, but to keep overhead low, I would utilize the employees at each salon to pack and ship things. And I converted one of the tanning salon rooms in one of the locations into my international corporate offices of the world. I joke because it's like a 10x10 room that used to have a tanning bed in it. And it's like right next to the bathroom. And it's, you know, it's not very glamorous or corporate or professional by any means, but I didn't want to increase the overhead by leasing another space. Like we weren't there yet to lease another space.
And that doesn't make sense, right? As a business owner, you're looking to keep your costs down. So your net profits are up. And how did, I mean, okay, how old are you now? How old when this?
I'm 43.
So no, you're 43, but how old were you when this was going on?
So this was 14 years ago. So late 20s, early 30s.
Okay. And I get the business side and I get the purchasing and I get the branding and remarketing and the you know, the spa concept and the bar concept, right? But how did you end up deciding, hey, guess what? You know what? Hell, I'm going to make my own makeup line. I mean, that is tough, man. During COVID, I started, I was doing, I don't know if you remember, I told you I was doing Linea. It was between a CEO friend of mine during COVID, and we were going to do blouses and tops for executives because we were always on Teams and Zoom calls. And there was no great fit for women. And, you know, just going and having, you know, we were here working in the US and working in China and trying to get the designs and get everything down and priced and shipped. And I mean, that's a big ordeal. And what did you start with? Did you start foundation? And
I had a collection of, I think it was 20 some odd items. So foundations, concealers, powders, multifunctional eyeshadows and blushes. I think because I knew the cosmetic side, meaning pieces, like individual items and what to produce, that part wasn't that complex for me because I already knew what I wanted to manufacture.
Right. And that was all from your beauty business. But did you understand at that time, because obviously when you were selling those products in the malls, you were having shipments coming into you from
other brands.
Other brands. Right. So did you ever reach out to them and say, hey, how did you get started? Or if there were smaller brands, like what was the entree into you being able to do this, especially that long ago?
A lot of those brands were gone. Like a lot of those were indie brands and they weren't around anymore. So the ones that were left were just much larger. I had some manufacturing partners that I knew about. And then I also supplemented the line with some private label as well. So there were some items that were core items from the line that I still have now that are custom formulations. And there were some private label items that kind of filled in.
And
the rest.
So when you're talking, just for clarification purposes, that when you're white labeling, so companies are coming to you and they are saying, okay, here's my brand, we'll sell it to you. And you, Mana Kadar Beauty, is going to wrap your label and position it as your own brand. Is that correct?
Right. And so I did the private label for items that I knew would not be, I wasn't going to buy deep into. So for people that don't have a manufacturing experience, most of the time when you're producing an item, there's what's called a minimum order quantity or an MOQ. Depending on the industry, it varies drastically. But for my purposes, it was about 5,000 units for a certain one color, one item. So for items that I was producing that I knew I would be able to move and had like that special touch, we went and we did the full MOQ. For items like foundations and powders, where I wasn't, that wasn't where I was leading in the marketplace because there were such big hitters that were already established. I wasn't going to compete there. Like, so that's where I did much smaller batches with private label to begin with. And that was the balance of, you know, the finance of the dollars out, right? Like, where do you want to put your dollars from for inventory and production?
And so you're manufacturing and then you're utilizing the tanning salons as a distribution center.
Right.
And you are not only selling obviously in the tanning salons for the people that are coming and doing these treatments and seeing your products live, but you're now deciding, and I heard you say, I'm a global, we're here in the back of, it was next to the bathroom and we're shipping. And how did you start marketing that? Is that what you knew at that moment? Hey, I am going to start a beauty company with my own cosmetic line.
I did not know I was going to endeavor to where I am today. I knew I wanted to impact more women and give women tools that weren't out there to like look good, feel good in a much easier attainable fashion. I think part of the marketing plan was to, this is when websites were just launching, you know, World Wide Web. So I thought, okay, I would have a website and I would sell the products on the website. And, you know, I would be sipping champagne on a yacht somewhere and everything would just sell itself. And so that just didn't happen. I had to recreate the marketing message, the branding message, the product assortment. I mean, countless times. And even today, I'm challenged to do that because the marketplace changes and consumer demands change. So what worked 2 or 3 years ago may not work today. So we started off very, very modestly. And then just from there, it grew. Like we did TV shopping a lot. So that was a really great way to talk to the end consumer and explain to them, you know, what is this product? What can it do? You can demonstrate, you know, you basically have like a 5-minute sales pitch for every product. So that was a really great way for us to get the name out there.
And this is you still by yourself. You didn't have any other partners.
I still don't have any partners to this day.
Right. And talk to me about, did you have advisors? Did you surround yourself with mentors? Or was it really just you?
At the beginning, it was very much just me. A couple of years later, I did join a CEO forum group that I'm still a part of today. And since then, I've grown my group of mentors, advisors, professional groups, girlfriends like yourself, where I can, you know, just call and be like, okay, what do you think about this issue? But that was part of the growth, I think, is, you know, I'm an only child, so I'm not used to having a lot of people to turn to. So that wasn't normal for me. And I think culturally, I'm not really sure if that's kind of the norm either. So it took me a minute to recognize, okay, there's so many people that want to help and there's so many great resources out there. And I am responsible for learning and I'm responsible for meeting the right people, finding the right partners and, you know, learning how to grow the business. So, but for the first few years, it was very much myself and trial and error, mm-hmm. more successes than, you know, than failures. You know, you learn from the failures too.
Oftentimes I meet many, many people where they have this idea that beauty, right? They see the Kardashians and how they've become these huge influencers and social media has allowed, you know, people the luxury of really being able to now reach a lot of other people for different branding and things. But, you know, people see you, Manna, you know, you're on the cover of magazines, you're drop dead gorgeous, you're smart, you are a go-getter. And they say, hey, you know, I want the life of Manna Kadar, right? Because they envision you're on that yacht and you're drinking champagne and they don't understand the sweat equity that you put in before nor that you put in now. And I think that sometimes is a disservice for what social media does because it positions you in a way that it all looks fabulous and it all looks easy. And frankly, it's not, right? And they don't see the behind. But, you know, people are entering in and saying, I want to get in the line of, I can't tell you how many people I know and young girls that want to get in the beauty business and they're going to start and they're going to launch their own brand or they want to get in to swimsuits. And we both know a phenomenal leader who's going to be on this podcast who, great. You know, took a stab at, and not more a stab, my God, she sold a huge company in the swimsuit line. But it's you see all these people coming and they want to do what you're doing, but the success rate is so very low, right? If you look at your brand and you look at other brands and you're sold in Ulta and you're sold here and you're sold there and you're global now, it's like you never even thought about that. You never thought about, it sounds to me in me talking to you, am I going to make it or I'm not? It's like, you didn't care. You were just fearless and you just kept going. And hey, you know what? This is a great concept. And I'm going to start my own beauty line. And I'm going to investigate it and I'm going to put it through myself because you didn't have a group of advisors or CEOs that were telling you what to do. This was all generated on lessons learned from yourself. And, you know, obviously I think you being in a financial analyst helped. I think you going to USC and the business school helped. But really, you kind of made it all on your own. it sounds like.
Well, you know, when I finally did expand and really seek out knowledge and help from other people and groups, I really felt that that's when my mind expanded, ideas expanded, and then everything else exponentially expanded as a result of that. But, you know, when people talk about like, oh, I want to do, I'll use example, I want to start a cosmetics company. One of the first questions I ask is, okay, tell me why you want to do that. Because a lot of times it is what you were speaking of, where they see this very much after picture, this persona of what this life is. Why do you want to do that? And then I ask, okay, well, how do you think you're going to get there? I try the best I can from a social media perspective to not always show the glamorous side, because at the end of the day, it's an everyday business day in and day out. You know, I cannot tell you how many times I'm schlepping samples, you know, I made it down Skid Row the other day to go to an appointment. And it's the opposite of glamorous. It's hard work. As an entrepreneur, you're always on there. There's never a moment that you're off, because it's your business. And so many people rely on you as a result of what you do within the business. Like we were saying earlier, you know, one act or one decision has so many different consequences as a result. And when, you know, I love how refreshing this interview is, because I mean, there are so many times, like, failure for me was never an option. I don't think, oh, I have this challenge, I'm going to go out of business or I'm going to fail. So never has that thought crossed my mind. Even when COVID happened and all of my orders got canceled for the year and I had literally zero future revenues that I could see.
Yeah.
In sight for the foreseeable future. But even then I was like, okay, you know, what are we going to do to get through this? But if I look back now and I see how many times I was at a crossroads between like, oh shoot, I could have really just fell off the cliff and been done, but I didn't, you know, I made some good decisions and, you know, got back on that right path. But I think we do need to shine more light on the times where entrepreneurs could have just failed totally.
Yeah. And I think a big part of being an entrepreneur and launching a brand, or really just, you know, even the individual who's working for a large corporate environment and they're losing hope in themselves, is to turn and be resilient, to look forward, look at where you want to be, instead of always focusing where you are in that moment in time. And during COVID, like you said, I was in the same boat, and it wasn't an option to say, we're going to close our doors. The mm-hmm. option was, I'm not going to necessarily look at where I am this moment, but what we're going to do and where I'm going to get this company moving forward, or as an individual, how I'm going to get myself out of this funk and move forward. What's mm-hmm. my career plan? And if you don't have a plan, you're probably not going to get yourself there.
Right.
Right. If you don't know who you are and you don't know a plan of how to get there, it's going to be really, really difficult.
Right.
So let's switch over, because we're going to run out of time here in just a little bit. But we talked about, you've got two beautiful children, and I follow you, of course, on social media. And you travel all the time. And what's really unique, I think, about you is that you travel with your kids. Mm-hmm. And they're with you, and your husband is with you. And it seems like that's a really important aspect of who you are, and incorporating them as well in the business, right?
Yep.
So talk a little bit about the struggle of work-life balance, and if you have a struggle with that, because I think the majority of people, you know, throughout the world are looking and saying, how do you have it all? And do you have it all?
I try to manage both as best I can. It's never perfect, right? I'm an entrepreneur. My husband's an entrepreneur. I have another global business. So we have like these two crazy schedules. And I think that when possible, we try to blend the family piece of it into it. Fun fact, I never wanted any kids. I never thought I would have any kids. And I met my husband. I'm like, oh, here we are. We have, you know, two kids later. So And they're the best. So I think part of that balance is trying to incorporate the kids into travel when we can, you know. So if I have a show somewhere and I, you know, I'll take the kids, and like even customer appointments, when they have a day off, I take them so that they can see what mom does on a daily basis and they can understand, you know, what it takes and what I'm actually just doing and how do we get there. So I think on a daily basis, I prioritize. Like some days it's going to be very business focused, and I work very mindfully and I work very intentionally on what I'm doing. So I don't often have a lot of distractions around. There's no TV going in the background. I'm not checking social media incessantly. I have a project, I work on that project, and then I move on. And so a lot of times when people are texting me during the day, people are not shocked if I don't get back to them until much later. So I really try to compartmentalize what I do. And same thing with the family. Like if I'm with the family, then I also, you know, I just focus on the family. So I'm all in for that period of time. And then I just have really great communication with my team and with my husband and letting them know what I need so that I could be best supported and also for me to give people the best results of what they're looking for.
Right. And support them too, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
exactly.
Is, you know, how they could best support you and how you can best support them. And I know as moms, we want to be at every soccer game and we want to be at every horseback riding lesson and doing this. And if we're not there, we feel like we're not doing our jobs. But I haven't felt that way. I prioritize things that are really important and mm-hmm. I'm super involved. And I think, like you said, I've always brought my kids to work. I mean, shoot, they'll come. I have a 21-year-old and sometimes he'll come to my office and sit and work there. And just to be around business people and to understand, you know, there is no option really for my kids. And I'm sure it's yours. I mean, you both are entrepreneurs and my husband's a president and I'm a CEO and my kids look and they say, okay, you know, we're going to make something of ourselves. And we, at a young age, are already thinking about what we're going to do, because it's almost like what your mom did with you, right? Looking at, instead of watching TV and wasting away yourself, of course, we didn't have social media then, but you know, you're going to read the dictionary, you're going to learn right. something, right? You're going to be conversant in this language and you're going to be something from mm-hmm. a young age. And I'm going to find you so many classes to educate you, not only on the culture, but around responsibility and, mm-hmm. and productive people. Right. So I have a couple last questions for you. If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, right? And I know you said that there are a lot of mistakes made, but perhaps one that would enhance your trajectory now. If you had to give yourself a piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say to, when there is an issue that arises, to really pause, ponder the issue. A lot of times we're just knee-jerk reaction to what the issue is. A lot of times it's not pleasant, right? So then it triggers all sorts of other things. But really to pause, take a step back, and think about every single solution and what result that solution would give versus just doing the, you know, the first couple of things that come to mind.
Yeah. Well, an emotional, I think, it's a challenge for me. I have an emotional response to things very quickly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what we talked about, every facet of the business, it's like a series of dominoes, right? You change one thing, inevitably it's going to change other things. And this isn't for just entrepreneurs. It's for people who are in the workforce and who are looking at jobs. And, you know, how you handle one situation is going to have an effect right. on other things. And so thinking, you know, not what is it, paralysis by analysis, but not that, but just, right. I think slowing down, sometimes it's, we don't have to have the solution right then and there.
Yeah. Or taking it so many times now, I'll just say, let me get back to you on that tomorrow.
Yeah. And taking the night and thinking mm-hmm. through, and it's mm-hmm. smart. I have learned about myself. I will never send an email. If I get something and I get upset, I will never send it. I'll write it. And then I'll put in my drafts and I'll go to bed because it suits me then. And then I wake up in the morning and I think, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? Right. I was going to send this email. What was I thinking? And so just that pause gives you a little bit more focus and clarity.
Right.
Now, if you had an hour with one person to sit on a park bench on a beautiful day and speak with them about any topic, who would it be?
I think it'd be Oprah. She came up at a time where, I mean, she had so many, you know, she was an African-American woman in a very male-dominated industry. And I would just like to pick her brain on how she overcame all of those challenges to get to where she is today, because she has reached such incredible heights of her success. And I don't think that she's your stereotypical media personality by any means, you know, her anything about her. Like, she's just not, you know, typical for achieving that level of success from a media perspective. So I'm sure she's encountered many, many, many obstacles along the way. And I want to hear those clutch moments of how she dealt with all of that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, for a while there, right, people were chanting her name for president of the United States. I mean, she's a quite polarizing figure now from someone who didn't seem so polarizing. I mean, she was an actor, right?
Right.
Originally. And so, yeah, no one's ever said that. I think that's really astute. That's really astute. And then I've just got our fun five. You've listened to the podcast before.
Yes.
And we've got such to really know you so well. So I don't know if this is going to be, you know, boring for some people, but your role model as a child.
I think my mom, like just seeing what she's overcome, what she ultimately created, like a beautiful life, up until the time she passed. It's really touching to see what she's done. It's not the traditional answer, I would say, but I think life is more than financial success. And she definitely was the epitome of living her best life.
I think she's an amazing woman. I agree. Your favorite professional book? And you're a big reader, by the way. Vanna is an avid reader. If you follow her on social media, she reads constantly. She's always showing her self-improvement books. And it's like every week you read crazy. I mean, you're crazy.
Well, so do you. Fun fact, Nicole and I have been a part of book clubs.
yes, we have.
So my favorite book that's for professional work professionally is called Deep Work by Cal Newport. I don't know if you've read it before, but if you haven't, Nicole, I will pass my copy on to you. This is the book that really transformed the way I work and the principle of you lose a lot of time by distracting yourselves, checking your phone, checking emails constantly. So check this book out. It really helps you stay focused on the task that you're doing. And you are so, so, so much more efficient at the end of the day as a result of it.
Thank you. I will get that. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm in the midst of this. It's so ridiculous. For a Christmas gift, people who know me know that I read a lot. He gave me all these books. It's called Fourth Wing. And it's about 20-somethings kids in a dragon. I mean, something I would so far-fetched that I would never read in a Dragon Academy. And it's just a fun, crazy, easy read, but not my typical deep work. Pick that up.
Yes. Deep Work is great.
And then favorite country.
I love the USA. I mean, it's been such an amazing place. I know we live here, but there's so many areas to explore, but I am just forever grateful for all of the opportunities that I've been bestowed upon.
Yeah. I mean, you are living the American dream. You are why and what people hold up on a pedestal and look at and say, I want that for my children. I want that who are coming from other countries. And you see all the immigrants that are coming in now and they want that. They want to be able to work and start from nothing and flee a country and be here and have their child emulate your work and the success that you've had and be all over magazines and global distributors and on podcasts. And
well, I would say to them, they can just work hard. They can do it.
I agree. And what's your favorite downtime activity you use to recharge?
You know, I have been trying to deepen my meditation practice. I've been meditating for many, 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 many years, and it never gets any easier. However, I do see very profound differences in my life and the peace that I have in my life. Just funny side story. I was stuck at the airport and there's delay after delay after delay after delay. It was like, by the end of it, it was like 8 hours delayed. And it was a really early flight that I had to be there for. And you know what? I just did not bother me one iota. I was just like, okay. And it was just like cool as a cucumber. And I attribute that a lot to the meditation practice. And when we think of, you know, let's hold that email or figure out that solution till the next day, I really incorporate that into that meditation practice. And I feel much more clear about a lot of things in life after having done it. But it never gets easier.
It's so hard, Manna.
It is very hard. So that is something that definitely recharges me. And you have to keep working on it.
Yeah. Well, with anything, right?
Yeah.
And last question, your favorite project, since you always have a million of them going on.
My favorite project. So I just recently joined the board for Miracles for Kids. It's a nonprofit that is very near and dear to my heart. And thank you, Nicole, for always supporting the cause. And so there is a women's initiative that we're working on right now where we're trying to get to a certain dollar amount that is donated annually. It's $1 million a year, basically. That's a recurring micro donations, but the nonprofit Miracles can actually count on that as revenue every year. So we're trying to get to that point and really figuring out what the best way to get to that number is. So that is my fun give back project.
Such a great organization and cause. And I want to just do a quick plug for you and your business as well. So you are famous for the 7-minute face. And do you want to talk a little bit about how people can reach you, buy your products, where they can walk in a store, and maybe a little bit about the 7-minute full face completion?
So the brand is very much about multifunctional, long wear, double duty makeup that gives you all the tools where you can easily apply your face in 7 minutes or less. They're really great, just multitasking products that are super easy to use. You were at my makeup class that I did, right?
Yes, I was. I transformed. I turned gorgeous within 7 minutes. It was easy, right?
It was so easy.
It was so easy. And I remember I walked out, I took a photo and people were like, gosh, you look gorgeous. I was like, all right, Manna Kadar.
Well, you look gorgeous on a daily basis, but you can always find more on our Instagram, Manna Kadar Beauty. You can shop on our website, mannakadarcosmetics.com, and you can find our products at Ulta, Macy's, Bloomingdale's, Saks, and many more retailers globally. Thank you for your time, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you, Manna. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Elevate Your Career podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Irvine Technology Corporation, ITC, excels at finding top-tier tech professionals and matching them with businesses. Whether you're an employer with tech opportunities or a tech professional searching for the perfect role, ITC is your go-to solution. Visit www.irvinetechcorp.com for more information. Once again, it's www.irvinetechcorp.com. We'll see you on the next episode.